set it up.
They? Who in the hell is they?
WFMU.
They? Why, they is just plain and fancy they. That's who they is. Oh, my, what a bunch. Here you are, with a thumb up your ass and a big grin to pass the time of day with. They. Who the hell is they?
We never walk, we never talk, we never find a time.
But we are amigos.
To be close again.
I am not afraid.
There it goes again. Communication breakdown.
We kill you pretty soon.
Communication breakdown.
I am your friend, remember?
Too much concern for money to burn. Too many things to do.
If they move, kill them.
Now you don't need
me. You're stupid bastards.
And I don't need you. Communication breakdown.
How does it feel to be so goddamn right?
Communication breakdown.
Well, why don't you answer me, you damn yellow-livered trash?
One by one, they fell. Now the leaves are low. Cling to the ground. Communication breakdown.
Dirty son of a bitch.
Communication breakdown.
How in the hell come you didn't know that?
Too much too soon. Too much temptation. In a hurry.
Egg-sucking, chicken-stealing, gutter fed.
It's a sad situation. Too much worry.
It's covered, you stupid redneck pickerwood.
I can tell that it's over now.
That's very smart for you, damn gringos.
Communication breakdown.
We are friends.
Communication breakdown.
Well, how'd you like to kiss my sister's black cat's ass?
You're experiencing a communication breakdown on WFMU.org.
Chris T, Communication Breakdown number 12. This one all about the city of New Orleans. That's right. New Orleans, New Orleans, however you pronounce it. Whether you call it the Big Easy or the Crescent City or the Velvet Ditch, as one of my friends did. Place I quickly came to love. Utterly seduced by its charms. And now it lies under the sea in what was not a natural disaster, but a man-made one. That's right. That's what I think. And I'll tell you more as the program goes on, but we got a special salute to New Orleans tonight on Communication Breakdown, or I should say, today or whenever the hell you, who knows when you're listening to this? I have no idea what time it is you're listening to this or where you are. It could be anywhere. That's what's amazing about doing a podcast. It's really up to you, isn't it? We've got a number of elements in this program. But I'm going to start out with Mayor Ray Nagin's interview from WWL-TV in New Orleans on Thursday, August 31st, the one conducted by Garland Roubaix, where towards the end of the interview, they both become unable to speak. They are so choked with emotion. I'm going to play this in its entirety in case you hadn't heard it, because I think everybody should hear it. And then I've got some other stuff for you, including a Midnight Call a Friend segment with Andy Nicastro out in Seattle, Washington, where we talk about what might have saved the Levies. Yeah, I want to give money to Eugene Levy when he comes to my house. Why not?
That's right, Bobby Bittman. I'll give him money, sure.
Eugene Levy as Bobby Bittman as an old mule Skinner. See, now it's getting very high concept. And then I've got an interview with our very own Jim Marshall, a.k.a. The Hound, whose business and home were both lost in the flood of New Orleans. And finally, I've got a long installment, something I recorded when I was in New Orleans in 1997. It was December 29th, 1997. That was probably my fifth or sixth time down there. And I decided to go see the Coasters tribute at a local establishment called the Mermaid Lounge. Alex Chilton was going to be leading the tribute, and it was actually his birthday. Alex Chilton, who still is among the missing musicians of New Orleans. As I speak these words, he is still among the missing. We can only hope that he turns up sooner or later, but he can be heard in this final segment leading the band. I wish I could remember the names of the other band members, but frankly, I didn't write them down back in 1997, and that information is lost to time, I'm afraid. But it was a great night to be in New Orleans, to be in a great place with wonderful music and all the booze you could want. Back then, I was smoking, and I probably had a cigarette in my hand the whole damn time. So without any further ado, let's start Communication Breakdown number 12 for the lost city of New Orleans.
WFMU.
Give me executive powers to authorize me to dictate and to manage military resources down here, and I'll fix this for you. You call him right now, and you call the governor, and you tell him to delegate the powers that they have to the mayor of New Orleans, and we'll get this damn thing fixed. It's politics, man, and they're playing games, and they're spinning. They're out there spinning for the cameras.
But can't they just... If nothing else, look at 25% of their energy coming from the state is not flowing through the pipelines. We're on the verge of anarchy. Can't they understand that they're, if nothing else, they're going to be hurt politically?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, the air conditioning must be good because I haven't had any in 5 days. And maybe there's some smoke coming out of the air conditioning units that's clogging some folks, their vision.
Have you talked with the president?
I've talked directly with the president.
What did he
say? Talked to the head of the Homeland Security. I've talked to everybody under the sun. I've been out there, man. I flew these helicopters, been in the crowds, talking to people, crying, don't know where their relatives are. I've done it all, man. And I tell you, man, Garland, I keep hearing that it's coming. This is coming, that is coming. And my answer to that today is BS. Where is the beef? Because there is no beef in this city. There's no beef anywhere in southeast Louisiana. And these goddamn ships that are coming, I don't see them.
What did you say to the President of the United States, and what did he say to you?
I basically told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over an Air Force One does not do it justice. and that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people. That was stuck in attics, man. Old ladies, when you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down here. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
Did you say to the President of the United States, I need the military in here?
I said I need everything. Now, I will tell you this, and I give the President some credit on this. He sent one John Wayne dude down here that can get some stuff done, and his name is General Honoré. And he came off the doggone chopper, and he started cussing, and people started moving. And he's getting some stuff done. They ought to give that guy, if they don't want to give it to me, give him full authority to get the job done, and we can save some people.
What do you need right now to get control of this situation?
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal. And I can't emphasize it enough, man. This is crazy. I've got 15 to 20,000 people over at the convention center. It's bursting at the seams. The poor people in Plaquemines Parish, they're air vacuuming people over here in New Orleans. We don't have anything, and we're sharing with our brothers in Plaquemines Parish. It's awful down here, man.
Do you believe that the president is seeing this, holding news conference on it, but can't do anything until Kathleen Blanco requests him to do it? And do you know whether or not she has made that request?
I have no idea what they're doing, but I will tell you this. You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying. And they're dying by the hundreds, I'm willing to bet you. We're getting reports and calls that is breaking my heart from people saying, I've been in my attic. I can't take it anymore. The water is up to my neck. I don't think I can hold out. And that's happening as we speak. And you know what really upsets me, Garland? We told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We say, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Everybody. The governor, you know, Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater. Our sewage and water board people, Marcia St. Martin, stayed there and endangered their lives. And what happened when that pumping station went down, the water started flowing again in the city, and it started getting to levels that probably killed more people. In addition to that, we had water flowing through the pipes in this city. That's a power station over there. So there's no water flowing anywhere on the east bank of Orleans Parish. So a critical water supply was destroyed because of lack of action.
Why couldn't they drop the 3,000-pound sandbags or the containers that they were talking about earlier? Was it an engineering feat that just couldn't be done?
They said it was some pulleys that they had to manufacture, but, you know, in a state of emergency, man, you are creative. You figure out ways to get stuff done. Then they told me that they went overnight and they built 17 concrete structures, and they had the pulleys on them, and they were going to drop them. I flew over that thing yesterday, and it's in the same shape that it was after the storm hit. There is nothing happening. and they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
If some of the public called, and they're right that there's a law that the president, that the federal government can't do anything without local or state request, would you request martial law?
I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. We did that a few days ago.
Did the governor do that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we called for martial law when we realized that the looting was getting out of control, and we redirected all of our police officers back to patrolling the streets. They were dead tired from saving people, but they worked all night because we thought this thing was going to blow wide open last night. And so we redirected all of our resources, and we held it under check. I'm not sure if we can do that another night with the current resources. And I am telling you right now, they're showing all these reports of people looting and doing all that weird stuff, and they are doing that. But people are desperate, and they're trying to find food and water, the majority of them. Now, you got some knuckleheads out there, and they are taking advantage of this lawless situation where, you know, we can't really control it. And they are doing some awful, awful things. But that's a small majority of the people. Most people are looking to try and survive. And you've got one of the things people have, nobody's talked about this. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely, it was scary to me. And that's why we were having the escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off. And they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug-starving, crazy addicts, drug addicts, that are wreaking havoc. And we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Well, you and I must be in the minority because apparently there's a section of our citizenry out there that thinks because of a law that says the federal government can't come in unless requested by the proper people, that everything that's going on to this point has been done as good as it can possibly be.
Really?
I know you don't feel that way.
Well, did the tsunami victims request you go through a formal process to request? Did the Iraqi people request that we go in there? Did they ask us to go in there? What is more important? This is, you know, and I'll tell you, man, I'm probably going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble it ain't even funny. They probably won't even want to deal with me after this interview is over.
Well, you and I'll be in the funny place together.
But we authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq. Lickety quick. After 9/11, we gave the president unprecedented powers, lickety-quick, to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where most of your oil is coming through, a place that is so unique, when you mention New Orleans anywhere around the world, everybody's eyes light up. You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need? Come on, man. You know, I'm not one of those drug addicts. I am thinking very clearly. And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
Okay. We'll do that. What else can we do?
Organize people to write letters, make calls to their congressmen, to the president, to the governor. Flood their doggone offices with requests to do something. This is ridiculous. I don't want to see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences. Don't do another press conference until the resources are in this city. And then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something. And let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law precedent it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We're both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
Okay.
Mayor Ray Nagin in New Orleans on Thursday, August 31st, being interviewed by Garland Rubinet on WWL-TV. Getting quite worked up over how New Orleans was abandoned to its fate. Me too. And me, I should say. Chris T, Communication Breakdown, number 12. All about the lost city of New Orleans. And my first visit down there, as I mentioned earlier, was in 1984. Went with Kaz to see the Mardi Gras on an amazing road trip. And then I next returned in 1992, I believe, with a girlfriend, with a woman I was madly in love with. I managed to talk her into coming down to New Orleans with me, flying down to meet me, actually. I went ahead of her. And then she came down and she showed up on New Year's Eve. And I picked her up from the airport and I whisked her back to where I was staying with some friends. I believe it was on Audubon Street. And we had a wonderful New Year's Eve. It was magical. It was that kind of magic that you used to experience. One used to experience in New Orleans. At least I did. Every time I went down there, something amazing happened. And on this particular trip, something really amazing happened, because the girlfriend wasn't really enjoying the accommodations all that much. We were staying in a house with other people, and there wasn't a lot of privacy, and we went downtown the following day. We went actually to the French Quarter the following day. It was New Year's Day, and we wandered into the shop. We came across this place called Puella's, run by these two gay gentlemen, who decided they were going to read our palms, and they did. And as we were talking to them, you know, just it came out somehow that they knew a real estate agent. We were telling them about where we were staying, and, you know, I think I may have said something about, you know, we're not too happy with the accommodations. And this gentleman puts me in touch with this woman who just happens to have this timeshare that's available, because the people who were supposed to be using it couldn't get into town that day for some reason, or they canceled their trip at the last moment. So she was offering it to us for the insane price of $100 for the night. And it turned out to be these deluxe accommodations on Rampart Street. And I mean, like, with a pool and a laundry room and a sunken living room. It was one of the nicest places I've ever stayed in. And it was right there in New Orleans. And I was with this woman. I was absolutely crazy about, and she was crazy about me, and we just had a great time together. It was absolutely amazing staying in this place, and that's the kind of thing that would happen down there to me when I was in New Orleans. Something interesting would happen. And speaking of something interesting, somebody interesting is coming up right now. Andy Nicastro, who we've heard from before on this program out in Seattle, Washington, is my Midnight Call a Friend guest right now on Communication Breakdown. You're on the Communication Breakdown podcast.
Oh, I am.
I feel I should be upfront about that.
Okay, good. Before the, well, no, I could curse on the podcast.
Yes.
All right. Excellent.
Well, now you can. Who knows what's going to happen after the next clampdown?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
They installed a new head of the FCC, and I just heard by email that Rehnquist has died.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, for violating the FCC.
So this week we saw Rehnquist die and the great city of New Orleans die.
And thankfully only one can be rebuilt, you know.
Yeah, thankfully, but the other one can be replaced with a mirror image.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it'll be a little, we'll probably make Scalia will probably become the Chief Justice.
That, or as I like to call him, that scumbag.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then they'll bring in another right winger to be the new Rehnquist.
Well, I was calling to see if you had anything to say about New Orleans.
Yeah, no, I always heard it was very nice. It's one of those places, you know, yeah, I'd go to, but and they're probably going to rebuild it.
Yeah, they're going to rebuild it and turn it over to Disney to run.
Yeah, exactly. Still, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be years and, you know. So,
well,
so it's gonna...
when I saw our president, or as I like to call him, that scumbag, on TV and... handing out sandwiches. Did you see him handing out sandwiches?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you don't know how I was hoping just one of those people, like, just, like, punched him in the gut real hard or something,
right.
You know, so that the Secret Service would run over, but not actually, like, stab him or anything like that. You know, nothing that would get them in trouble, but just, like, real quick, rabbit punch him in the stomach, you know?
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
He just gets knocked out of it. He gets the air knocked out of him, and he's like,
Right, exactly. Right.
That would be fun to watch on television.
Oh, that would be great. What live TV is all about. No, I remember like when it first started, you know, when the hurricane was going on and people were like all concerned or whatever. I said to Doris, you know, I said to my mom, I just like, you know, there's always some flood or something or whatever. I said, you know, unless this is on the scale of Pompeii, I really don't care.
And it's on the scale of Pompeii.
And, you know, it turns out, you know, the city basically has been wiped out like Pompeii.
It's a deluge. But, you know, it's not a natural disaster. I keep arguing with people who use that phrase because it's a man-made disaster.
That's right.
This is something that the Army Corps of Engineers has been engineering themselves since the 1950s or 40s when they started trying to control the Mississippi River, among other things.
Exactly.
They disposed of thousands of miles of Louisiana wetlands, apparently, and wetlands that might have absorbed the impact of a storm like Katrina.
Right.
Instead,
the city was below sea level.
Oh, it existed in a bowl protected by levees, and the levee broke, and that's that.
Yeah. Now, wasn't there a Led Zeppelin song when the levee breaks?
Yeah, but, you know, they got that from Memphis Minnie, actually. That was a Memphis Minnie song that they sort of borrowed and, of course, amplified with all their drugs and their long hair.
Right.
Oh, I read a blog just now, where this guy, he wrote this great blog entry. It's called R.I.P. G.O.P.
Uh-huh.
And it's about how he feels this is the end of the Republican Party as we know it.
Right.
That they cannot weather this. There's no way they could spin this.
Mm-hmm.
That these images cannot be spun.
Right. Right. I've heard some people saying that.
Yeah.
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
People think that, oh, this is going to look horrible. Now, I think, you know, people will be a little bit upset. But, you know, ultimately, you know, Bush did go down there and...
hand out sandwiches?
And hand out sandwiches and hug black people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that people will... some people will be upset, but no, it's basically, you know, he's not going to get that much damage from it.
I'm on the fence about this. I'm going back and forth on it. I think you might be right, but I also think it might be what you call a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
And that people might start thinking a little differently about things.
Right.
But what I think, you couple this with the price of gas going up to $3 a gallon or $4 a gallon or wherever it might top out, and the ongoing Iraqi war,
right?
You got a pretty heady brew. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe they could have weathered this, no pun intended, if there wasn't those two other things happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this ongoing war with no clear purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Except to install a religious theocracy where one didn't exist previously.
Right.
And
liberation.
To do it all with taxpayer dollars and the blood of young Americans. And then, you know, the price of gas, you know, going up. And now we're being told, guess what? We're going to fuck you some more because of this thing.
Right. I'm just not, you know, holding my breath that the American public is going to finally go, hey, wait a minute, you know. Wait a minute, we elected assholes. Oh, shit, let's unelect them. You know, I just think that most Americans will just blame it on a nebulous sort of government. And most Americans are you know, they're pretty docile. And I think they do sort of, and I think they accept things that most Europeans would not. You know?
Well.
And I just don't see them getting... You know, they might get angry or pissed, but they'll just say, you know, it's, you know, we can't have still. It's, at least it's better than those Democrats, you know, or something along those lines. People aren't nearly as pissed as they should be. I think where it's really going to hurt us, actually, with the whole flood, where I think the flood really does, is it totally destroys us internationally. I think internationally we're a freaking joke at this point. I mean, not only can we not win a war against the Iraqis, right? You know, I mean, the Flintstones over there, we can't win that war.
Yeah.
But we can't even defend our own citizens.
Yeah.
So the whole United States, you know, posing as the indispensable nation. Oh, please. That's just a joke at this point. This country, they can't help themselves. They can't do anything. I mean, when you have when the Army Corps of Engineers can't just, you know, can't fix a busted levee, how much should the Chinese be afraid of American know-how?
Well, that's true, because the levee's kind of an old concept, isn't it? I mean, it goes back a ways.
Exactly.
Right?
It goes back to, like, you know, Egypt, Sumer.
You know, this actually was avoidable. This is kind of thing where there had been studies that had been going on for years, and people for years saying, you know, this city is shit out of luck. If it gets hit by a Category 5 hurricane, it's gone.
Right.
People had been saying this for a long time.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely.
Apparently, the last time was in 2002, and that was on George's watch, wasn't it?
It was.
Wasn't he president? Wasn't he in the second year of his disastrous presidency?
Yeah. Yeah, they were just preparing for their upcoming war.
Yes.
But yeah, no, but once again, like with the levy, like, oh, you know, the levy, blah, blah, blah. But if they had gone to the people of Louisiana or whatever and said, you know, you got to pay more taxes and we're going to build a levy, well, then they never would have done it. You know what I mean?
You know what? I have a great idea, though. Yeah. I this would have worked in retrospect. It's too bad we hadn't thought of it.
Man.
What if you got Eugene Levy to go and ask them for money for the levy?
He would never break.
I would have done a whole Hollywood tour type of thing called, you know, Levy for the Levy. And he would have brought a little levity to the situation.
Levity for the levy.
Right. He could have went and gone with like a bucket in his hand and asked done a little 5 minutes of Eugene Levy type of stuff. Let him work up a whole routine on mule skinners or something. Who knows?
Exactly. And he could bill himself as the levy that won't break.
That's right. And we could have dressed him like a mule skinner and sent him out with a mule.
There we go.
And the mule could be toting the money around, you know?
Yeah.
And that way you have a visible thing of like, yeah, I want to give money to Eugene Levy when he comes to my house. Why not?
That's right. Bobby Bittman. I'll give him money. Yeah. Sure.
Eugene Levy as Bobby Bittman as an old mule skinner. See, now it's getting very high concept.
Christopher Guest could drop by, you know, get a whole sort of thing going. You know, I mean?
You know, the life of a mule skinner was a difficult one, but that's what they did. They kept the mules going back and forth to the levee.
Right.
And they were very important in the whole process, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the levee, quite a big thing. But those very same levees, the ones that helped channel and direct the Mississippi River, are the ones that killed the wetlands.
Right.
And destroyed any chance for New Orleans surviving this kind of storm. So, anyway, all right, listen, I'm going to get Eugene Levy's people on the phone, and I'll let you know what they say. Thanks, Andy.
Sure.
Take care.
Okay.
Oh, Andy Nicastro all the way from Seattle, Washington. Communication breakdown. Phone a friend. I've just been speaking with Andy Nicastro of Seattle, Washington, my midnight call a friend. Coming up in just a moment, a discussion with Jim Marshall, a.k.a. The Hound, who was on these airwaves for many years playing greasy R&B. He's going to talk about what happened to his business and his home in New Orleans. The first time I went down there, I mentioned I was with my friend Kaz. And we headed out one day to the St. Louis Cemetery, Cemetery Number 1. We found it in an incredible state of disrepair. There was actually mausoleums that had been broken open. There were caskets lying on the ground. I lifted one up with my foot and found a pair of dentures beneath one. It was just in a terrible, terrible state. I have the photos to prove it. I will be putting those up on the Communication Breakdown blog in a week or so, so check those out. Right now we're going to speak with Jim Marshall, a.k.a. The Hound. And then I've got a special treat for you, a Alex Chilton-led tribute to the Coasters recorded in New Orleans in 1997. First, The Hound.
WFMU.
We're talking with James Marshall, a.k.a. The Hound, who hosted a program on this very radio station for many years. From when? Like the late 80s to about...
I think I started in the fall of 83, and I think I finished around 97 or 8.
That's a good long while.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that stuff's been collected on the internet at thehound.net by B-E-R.
Yeah, Brian Redman.
Brian Redman.
Put up a site with lots of air checks.
So I'm going to incorporate that into my blog so people can go there and check out the air checks.
Yeah, there's a lot. You can download millions of obscure records for free.
and after that time, after the show sort of ended, you went into the bar business with the Lakeside Lounge. And
right, and I have a place in New Orleans, or had until Monday, called Circle Bar.
Right on Lee Circle?
Right.
When I emailed you, you said that both the business and your house down there were under 6 feet of water.
At least, more like 8. Well, the only photograph I've seen of Lee Circle was from Monday, and there were boats going down St. Charles. The top of the streetcars were just above the water, so the streetcars were about maybe 8 feet high.
So what's your plan in the wake of this? I mean, obviously you can't get down there for a while. Are you just considering it abandoned, or are you?
I can't imagine that there'll be anything left.
Yeah.
Possibly a FEMA check. I don't know. You know, my partner down there, I don't know if you knew Kelly Keller.
Yeah.
She passed away right around this time last year. And, you know, since then, my heart kind of went out of it. So my other partner's been running it, and I don't know what to say, you know. I mean, I would like my employees to still have their jobs, but I just don't think the building is going to survive.
At this point, it might be just a case of your employees having their lives, because it just seems like more and more they're turning up dead bodies down there. They're just it's become a disaster on a level that nobody really sort of saw coming.
Most of my employees do live in the Ninth Ward, which got hit the worst, because that's kind of like the East Village, you know, of New Orleans. It's the inexpensive sort of hipster, you know, neighborhood.
Right.
But it's traditionally been a fairly poor neighborhood, and when the Industrial Canal went over, I mean, people were chopping through their roofs, sitting on their roofs, you know. And obviously this government does not give a flying fuck about anything but the oil, because it's, what, their storm hit Monday and there's still no food and water. I mean, they can't
there was obviously no plan for New Orleans for a hurricane or for the levees.
I think there was a plan, and the plan was to take as much money away from the Corps of Engineers as they could get away with.
Yeah, they've been cutting back, you know, on these budgets. They were supposed to, you know, the whole infrastructure of that levee system has not been touched in you know, almost 60 years. And they've been cutting the, you know, they basically redirected all the money to the to Iraq. And so a political decision was made to sacrifice New Orleans, obviously.
Yeah, it's kind of reminding me very much of what came out in the wake of 9/11, which is they knew this, they knew that. They didn't want to spend the money on this. They didn't want to spend the money on that. They had more important things to spend the money on.
Yeah, like, what they care about is the oil and the rich people, and that's basically it.
So, I mean, it's just now, they're just now starting to talk on CNN about the race and the class issues. How do you come down on any of that?
Well,
that these are poor black people, and that's why they're sitting there waiting for help.
That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just find it hard to believe that they can't get food and water to these people. They're not even trying. I mean, there's, you know, the mayor took the entire police force off of rescue missions to protect property. I mean, that's where his. So he basically, you know, Nagin made a decision that property was more important than human lives.
Because of what? Because of the looting that's going on?
Yeah.
And because of the, yeah.
Because of the looting. So they decided they took the whole police force off of search and rescue and put them on protecting property. And, the you know, the people who own the property, these are all, you know, big chains like Walmart and stuff. I mean, the Walmart that was looted on Chapultepec, the neighborhood fought that thing for years. Nobody wanted it there. Nobody likes it, you know, and they put it through. That's what happens when you have a Republican mayor, like what happens here. You know, when they in New York City, when they changed the laws so that they could open big chain stores, you know, one by one, all the mom and pops are gone, and now it's all Best Buy and, you know, Walgreens, you know, just what are these? What's that big fucking one? You know, the hardware store they just opened on 23rd
Street. Oh, the
Home
Depot. Yeah,
Home Depot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing. That's what happened in New York. The tragedy with New Orleans, one is it was the most beautiful city in America architecturally, and two, it was probably the one of the last places with any sort of indigenous culture that wasn't owned by international corporations. I mean, New Orleans is the only place where Starbucks never caught on.
Right.
There's one Starbucks in New Orleans, and it's nobody ever goes in there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another.
It's a place that's been able to hang on to its past, and now I just wonder where that's all going to go. I mean, this seems like the kind of event that could really. I read something in the paper just now about this being, you know, a social disaster for New Orleans.
Yeah, and a cultural disaster, because there's just, you know, there are traditions that have been kept alive in New Orleans, like, you know, brass bands, which is what jazz grew out of, and things like that that are, will certainly suffer.
What is the future, I'm wondering? We don't know how long this is going to take to clean up. We have no idea.
We're talking about months and months.
And in that time, of course, people are going to be out of work. People are going to be leaving the city.
Right. I mean, it's a poor city anyway.
Right.
I mean, what they'll do is the oil companies will glom most of the federal money, and they'll rebuild the pipelines. And, you know, they'll put up some crappy projects where there were once beautiful little Creole cottages. And, you know, basically what will happen is everything will get worse, like they always do.
What about the music?
And that too, you know, I mean, the musicians are kind of at the bottom of the food chain. They mostly live hand to mouth. You know, there's for every one Harry Connick Jr., there's 50, you know, trombone shorties who have to play on the street to pay their rent.
I have people asking me all the time about you, like if you're doing radio, where you're at, what you're up to, and never really know how to respond. What do you say to these folks who say, when are you coming back, or are you coming back? Or
Well, I certainly don't want to ever work for free again. and I just don't think there's a... I doubt there's a... I mean, there probably is a commercial market for what I do, but it'd be hard to convince anybody in a position of power that that there is. I mean, I think my website got like 75,000 hits last month, and there's only about 10 links to it out there.
But you know what's really cool? I'll tell you what's really cool about it is that when I went to look for it, I just typed in the words "The Hound" in a Google search, and you were the first thing that came up.
Yeah, I mean, I know I get a lot of hits, and there's a lot of, I get mail from all over the world from this thing, but in terms of ever getting a job in radio, I kind of doubt that'll ever happen. I mean, I've just been writing, and I've been, running the bar, and I got married, and I bought a house.
And programming.
I garden a lot, and I cook a lot.
You garden, did you say?
I garden, and I cook.
So what the hell do you need with radio?
Well, you know, radio is, it's a castrated medium, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's become the domain of bad politics and bad music, and there ain't really much you can do about it. I mean, it's potentially the most interesting of all the media in my mind because, you know, there's so much that you can leave to your imagination, and there's so much music that is never going to be heard. But you know what? Maybe people just get what they deserve in life, you know? I mean, I don't remember who said it, maybe Thomas Jefferson or something, that people get the government they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just what's happening.
Well, I'm enjoying doing a podcast because, I mean,
what is a podcast exactly?
Well, it's a newfangled thing, you know, and it's called podcast because of the Apple iPod.
An iPod, but I don't think I can get radio stations on it.
You don't have to. You just hook it up to the internet, and then you download a show onto your iPod. You know, so for instance, you would go to the website I think it's just podcast.wfmu.org, and then there's a bunch of them on there, including my show, which I started doing when the Aerial View program went off the air. When the talk show ended. So it's been, there's about 11 of them now. This will be number 12, the show. And, you know, I hadn't really figured out what to talk about yet. And when this whole thing happened, I figured I would talk about New Orleans because it is my second favorite American city. You know, I've been back and forth there a lot since my first Mardi Gras in 1984. And I have friends down there who I haven't been able to reach. And
nobody's cell phone is working. I definitely have friends there that I'm afraid for because, you know, there are people that, like, I know wouldn't have left the city because they were of their cats and dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, oh, man, they're going to be underwater.
And the fact that it comes under the heading of something that didn't have to happen, and the more we call it a natural disaster, it's beginning to seem like a man-made disaster to me.
In a lot of ways. There was a sniper out in front of Charity Hospital today.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was no cops, no National Guard, no nothing. They're trying to evacuate these people on dialysis and stuff, and there's somebody up there shooting at them.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's a lot like what happened in Iraq when they looted the museums and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Oh, when Rumsfeld said that freedom was messy, you mean that?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, freedom is messy.
And you know, New Orleans is the South. I mean, the gun laws are very liberal. There's a lot of artillery on the street, let's put it that way.
There certainly is. I still remember my first New Year's Eve there with the guys coming out and shooting in the air.
Yeah, that still goes on. You know, the bullet comes down 5 miles away and kills somebody's baby.
Or a German tourist. It's always a German tourist. They always get it first.
Well, I remember on my block, a French chef and his wife were... I lived up on Laurel and Napoleon, and there was a carjacking, and their baby was shot.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it doesn't get any worse than that. But, I mean, I know a kid who used to play trumpet on the street in the French Quarter every day. I'd walk past this kid every day, 15 years old. He was sitting on the couch at his mom's house watching TV, and a bullet came right through the front window, a stray bullet, and killed him.
Well, you know, one of the last visits I had there, I was staying on a friend's couch at my friend Donna and Dave's, and I remember I had to get up early that morning to get a plane out, and I awoke to the sound of gunfire.
When they were living uptown, or when they were they moved back to the Quarter?
They were living uptown at the time, and I went to the back window, and I looked out, and there was a guy face down in the parking lot with blood streaming out of him.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, woke up Donna and Dave to tell them, they were kind of like, well, you know, it's over. It's done. You know, it's just drug dealers killing each other.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to speak to us about all this. What about Ernie K. Doe's widow? Have you heard anything about her?
The last I heard, my bar manager Lefty was going to pick her up, and they were going to head out west somewhere, and hopefully they made it. But you know,
yeah,
hopefully they didn't get carjacked or something. You know, I mean, Antoinette was, you know, one of the best people I know in the world. And God bless her. She had a very rough couple of years. You know, her mother died, Ernie died, Kelly died, and got, you know.
And now the business is gone. Yeah, it's just, you know, this is something that's going to change generations of lives. Not just, you know, people's lives, but it's.
It may, you know, you might just have to put an end to the, you know, the era of New Orleans indigenous culture that, you know, begins with Buddy Bolden at the turn of the last century and maybe ends right here. You know, hopefully there'll be enough left to rebuild. I mean, I just saw this thing recently. There's some congressman from Illinois saying that there's no point in rebuilding New Orleans.
Oh, it was Dennis Hastert, right?
Is that who it was?
Yeah. He said, what's the point of spending billions of dollars to rebuild a city that's 7 feet underwater?
Yeah, well, you know, and also they don't want to admit what's happening with global warming. We're going to see a lot more of these hurricanes.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that's amazing that I really didn't know about, but hurricane season's not over. There's still the second half of hurricane season.
Today's the 1st of September. We've got 6 more weeks.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, God forbid, there's another one that comes along. That's going to be really fucked up.
Yeah.
You
know, and
that will be very fucked up.
You know, it could land anywhere from Key West to Galveston.
It's funny you mentioned Galveston because I kept thinking about the Galveston flood, you know, and how in years past and times past people would go to like Coney Island to see recreations of the great disaster, the Galveston flood.
Yeah.
You know, and now you turn on CNN and it's on 24 hours a day.
It's weird how CNN just keeps replaying the same footage over and over again.
Well, I think the part of that's technical. They don't have a lot of people down there that could feed them new imagery, and they don't have a lot of ways to get the new imagery. They're just having technical. It's just a technical problem, you know.
Yeah,
that,
I guess.
Because if you're running a satellite phone on a battery, and then the batteries die, and you can't plug them in anywhere and recharge them, you're kind of fucked, you know. So
yeah.
I can understand that. It is annoying when they don't have anything new to say. They just repeat everything old, but. I am glad, finally, that somebody is saying, like, what does this have to do with the policies that the administration has pushed through, including cutting the budgeting of the Corps of Engineers and the other things that they've done that have had a direct effect on this. I mean,
sure.
Finally, somebody's asking the douchebag live on TV.
Well, yeah, I know CNN did ask, but, you know, then you got to... We'll see the response on the Fox News, of course, which will be, well, these people deserve what they get because they're looting for, you know, stealing Wonder Bread from Kmart or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, then the other thing that Scott McClellan, the president's mouthpiece, had to say kind of made me puke, which is this is not a time for politics.
Yeah.
Like anything they don't want to answer, they label as political.
And they're the worst for, you know, using these. I mean, look what they did with 9/11. They turned it into a completely... political situation.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that when Bush gets to New Orleans finally, and they baptize him on Canal Street for a good long time.
He won't.
Just baptize him.
He's not the kind of guy who walks around near the real people.
It would be nice, though, if somehow, like, thousands of those folks outside the convention center just broke loose and tore him limb from limb. I want to see that on live TV.
Yeah, that would be great.
That would be wonderful.
Or if they can't get to Bush, even Ray Nagin would be fine.
Oh, he's the mayor, right?
Yeah, yeah, the Republican mayor who owns the cable stations.
Yeah, he just issued a SOS. He was basically like, you know, this is a desperate situation. And
why does it take 4 days to get these people in there? I mean, to feed them.
They got to get the National Guard back from Iraq first.
Yeah, exactly.
They got to get them out. I read something like 75% of New Orleans National Guard, Louisiana National Guard, is in Iraq.
Yep.
And no one's been joining the National Guard since the war started in Iraq. They don't want to go.
Of course not. Nobody wants to.
So you got no National Guard.
Mm-mm. They're sending the guys down from, like, Pennsylvania and stuff. But well, they're dropping off supplies at the airport, which is 15 miles away, and there's no way to get it to where the people are, which is in the city.
Yeah, but you know what my fear is? The way to get it to the people in the city is going to end up being Halliburton or somebody like that.
They'll outsource it.
They're going to end up having a contract with some gouger. You know?
Yeah, you know goddamn well this administration is so blatantly profiteering in the... There's an interesting thing in the editorial page of the Times today about how this administration has been treating whistleblowers, about their profiteering.
Yeah.
And
which is firing them, demoting them.
Right.
And the same labeling thing, them liberals or whatever they have to
do. Yeah, you'll see the same thing will happen. I mean, most of the relief money in New Orleans will go to the oil companies. And then they'll outsource it to one of these, you know, the Halliburton or something, and they'll... You know, what is Halliburton? They pay 4 cents a gallon for gas in Kuwait and sell it for $3.60 a gallon to the army in Iraq.
Well, you got to have a markup, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of markup.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good
okay,
to talk
Chris.
To you. Jim
good
Marshall,
luck.
A.K.A. The Hound. You heard him. Not coming back to radio anytime soon. But, you know, at least you could do a hangover hop. Doesn't have to be on the radio.
That would involve leaving the house. One of these days.
All right, well, we'll come down to the lakeside and we'll play the jukebox.
Okay, then. Chris.
It's good to talk
Thanks
to you.
Thanks a lot. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
WMMU.
Jim Marshall, a.k.a. The Hound, talking about New Orleans and a bunch of other stuff as well, and why he's probably not coming back to the radio anytime soon. We move from Jim Marshall now to Alex Chilton, who, as of the recording of this podcast, is still among the missing musicians of New Orleans. And it saddens me. The man made a lot of people very happy through his music. I had the good fortune to catch him in 1997, December 29th, 1997, to be precise, at the Mermaid Lounge down in New Orleans, and a special tribute to the Coasters. It's also Alex Chilton's birthday that particular day. And I was going around at that time with a cassette recorder that I had shoved into the pocket of my leather jacket, and I had taped a microphone to the lapel, kind of hidden it, so that I can go around and surreptitiously record. You may remember this technique being used during aerial view. It was kind of low tech, but I did get some good recordings, and I think this is one of them in glorious mono. Selected excerpts from the tribute to the Coasters, December 29th, 1997, New Orleans. And what you'll hear first is me standing and waiting for the cab, and then the cab ride, and then we end up at the Mermaid Lounge.
You're experiencing a communication breakdown on WFMU.org.
It's December 29th, and it's 9:36 in the p.m. It's a Sunday night, and I'm standing in front of my host's house. On Audubon Street, in what is called the Uptown section of New Orleans, and I'm waiting for a cab from the United Cab Company to take me to the Mermaid Lounge. And at the Mermaid Lounge, I'm going to be seeing a tribute to the Coasters featuring Alex Chilton. I saw Alex Chilton when I was down here in 92 do quite a good show at Tipitina's. This thing is supposed to start around 10:30, 11 o'clock. They have a problem here in New Orleans at this time of the year, New Year's, because there's a lot of handgun owners and I suppose long arms as well, people who own guns of one type or another. They come out and they shoot them straight up into the air. A couple of years ago there was a tourist here from, I think, Massachusetts who was in the Jackson Square area, or I think over by the Jack's Brewery building. and she was killed by a falling bullet. And since then, there's been a massive campaign with posters that say, bullets fall down, and billboards and radio, TV advertisements basically telling people here not to discharge their weapons into the air on New Year's Eve. And supposedly last year it was pretty successful, but they're not sure how successful it's going to be this year. I've been warned against spending New Year's Eve out in the open because I had originally planned to go into the French Quarter and be outside in the vicinity of Jack's Brewery where they do the ball drop here. Also been invited to a couple of New Year's Eve parties, so don't know if it would be a good idea to be out of doors. How you doing tonight?
Well, not too well business-wise, but otherwise I'm okay. I have mostly my health and my family is happy.
Well, that's good to hear. Have all those tourists come into town yet, the Sugar Bowl people?
Even when they do, I don't think we're going to feel that impact.
No, it's supposed to be 80,000 people coming in.
Yeah, right.
That's what they say.
And all driving their own cars. And eating chicken from Popeyes. This is a Florida crowd, and in my opinion, not a very wealthy one.
Oh, really? I was here in 92, Sugar Bowl time, and it was Alabama and Miami.
They have money.
Yeah.
Both schools. This group is state schools, state universities. Alumni is not all that wealthy, and they're not necessarily coming anyway.
Uh-huh.
The last time they came in, Florida and Florida State, we didn't have a good Sugar Bowl, and I don't expect one this year.
Uh-huh.
I figure to be disappointed, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
It is too bad, and I wish that the damn Sugar Bowl people would quit doing that shit.
Mm-hmm.
They should have had Florida come as the number one team and then invited somebody else that was going to draw bigger.
You got to be invited to this thing?
That's right.
I thought it worked like the, you know, Super Bowl or something where you got to get into it.
See, if the Rose Bowl had any class, they would have released Arizona so that it could have been Florida and Arizona in the Sugar Bowl for the national championship. But they didn't do that.
Either one.
Have you seen any football fans yet wandering around?
Not many.
So we got some flooding.
I don't expect them until tomorrow and Tuesday, because, you know, that's a long time to go till Thursday night. And they'll be leaving Friday morning. You can believe by Friday night they'll all be gone. Very few will stay the weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of money to stay in New Orleans for a week.
Yeah, with about, I guess, $6 or $7 around.
That's why I'm staying with friends. But I haven't taken cabs everywhere.
Well, we appreciate it.
I gotta tell you, my friends told me, you know, only call United. And anytime I've gotten into somebody else's cab, had a terrible experience.
That's the way it is.
Whether it's
the guys and there ain't nobody else.
Just getting back to Audubon Street has been a major disaster. Most times when it's not a United cab.
Just stick with us, man. Wait for us. We're worth it.
Yeah, find a payphone.
Most of the places down there will call for us. I know the Mermaid calls for us all the time.
Uh-huh. Things quiet tonight downtown?
So far, everything's kind of quiet on the radio anyway.
One pack of Benson Hedges, menthol, and a six-pack Miller Lite.
They do a lot of that down here?
Yeah,
what's that?
Sending cabs out for cigarettes and beer?
More often than you might imagine, yeah.
23. Yeah, about 15 off of Tanya. 15, 18. We have a Tipitanas. 5-3 tips. We have a commander.
I realize it says one way, but I'm not paying any attention.
Well, maybe I'll see you on a return trip. Keep the change. Here.
Have a good evening.
Is that the way in? Was that the way in? I just walked in.
It's the way in for the moment.
Sounds like a good name for a band.
Monday next.
What do you mean?
I was here to see the coaster show.
Oh, I thought you came back here.
It's going to be a little while, not too long. I mean, none of the guys are here yet.
Okay.
I'm here. I'm the guy. I thought I got kicked out of the band.
No.
I ain't hip.
You ain't hip, man. But we need a guy that ain't hip. Right. What you need?
I have some Maker's Mark on the rocks. Band's not here yet, huh?
Nah. Well, Davis has got some of the gear here. It's realistically, it's always 10:30 or 11.
Yeah, I thought I was getting here early.
Wow. It's probably good. It just means you're going to have to get sloshed a little bit before
that's okay.
they come.
You don't have a free admission with a mermaid tattoo.
Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Not too bad.
Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Can I get you any?
Oh, how about a Diet Coke, please? And Tony,
yeah,
do you have
a... As a matter of fact, we get stuff to do. We're going to bring you for your message, too.
Well, here it is. Pretty new.
What?
The mermaid tattoo.
You get it, baby.
Yeah. If I stay here any longer, I'm going to have to go.
Yeah, I don't know. We started a second
now. Being done for free, too. That's the best
part.
Wow, it's really well done.
A friend of mine named Kim. A burgeoning tattoo artist.
Burgeoning? I think flourishing.
Yeah. So how long have you been here?
The bar?
Yeah.
About 2 years. Yeah, we're just a dopey little hideaway. Hey, Davis.
Yeah.
What do you think the cover's gonna be? $5?
Yeah, $5.
$5.
Next is going to be a half dozen of eggs, quart of milk, a couple olives. I can't find the pickles that I'm liking.
Okay, that's it, guys. We're going to scratch the poster because this one's a baby pop.
we threw him in the middle. Thank you. Buy this man a Schaefer. All right.
He was She'll get you a touch. You can look, but you Yeah. Baby.
Her knees were almost touching mine. A chill was running down my spine.
Live at the Mermaid Lounge, New Orleans, December 29th, 1997, with Alex Chilton and the Coasters Tribute. Yet another magical night spent in the Crescent City. I sure am going to miss the place. This has been a Communication Breakdown tribute to the lost city of New Orleans. I am Chris T. If you'd like to drop me a line at ct@wfmu.org, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with another Communication Breakdown.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day? I know I'm not wrong. The feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. Miss the moss-covered vines, the tall sugar pines, where mockingbirds used to sing. And I'd like to see the lazy Mississippi a-hurrying into spring. Oh, the Mardi Gras, the memories of Creole tunes that fill the air. I dream of old yonders in June, and soon I'm wishing that I were there. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans when that's where you left your heart? anymore. I miss the one I care for more than I miss New Orleans.